Good morning again. Compliment of the season, Rose, I haven't seen. Oh, I shouldn't be talking compliment of the season. It's now February. All right. So we're looking forward to Valentine's Day. All right. Honorable members, do you have copies of the agenda? And can we just look at the agenda and agree on it or adjust it or whatever you want to do? May I have a motion for the adoption of the agenda? Oh, do we have any apologies? Castle? Okay. Castle will go through the apologies.
We've received the following apologies: the Deputy Speaker, Mr. Karim, Ms. Loy Moropa, Ms. Kubai, Mr. Mashile, Mr. Masondo, the Chief Whip, and Dr. Musa will arrive late.
May I have a motion for the adoption of the agenda? Oh, Mr. Singh.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Good morning, colleagues. Can I tender an apology for tomorrow?
Okay.
Please. Thank you.
Ms. Martin. Thanks, Speaker. I'm also having an apology for my chief. He'll be arriving just now. After the control. Floor Chief.
All right.
No other apologies. A motion for the adoption of the agenda. Honorable Khatere.
Propose that the agenda be adopted.
Thank you. Is there any support or Ms. Kata?
Speaker, I will second the proposal.
All right. Any objection to the agenda? None. The agenda has been adopted. Can we move to item 3 and look at the minutes? Yes, Honorable Shubambu.
My apologies for arriving late. We came from a different province of doing off-site work yesterday.
Okay.
I had intended to make objection to the agenda in terms of so I may be lucky that you arrived when the item is on the agenda. The
agenda has been adopted.
No.
So we'll note your objection. We'll note your objection. At least I think that's a decent thing for us to do.
But when I arrived, we were still calling for hands of objection.
We were in the middle, we
were at
the end of the adoption of the agenda, and it was adopted. But we've taken your point and we hear you wanted to object, so we'll note your
But you have not just listened to me in terms of what is the basis.
No, no reason to listen to anything about the adoption of the agenda because it has been adopted. Going with the meeting and you might find actually as Lord Samuel to explain your objection, what it is that you would have been objecting about.
That's fine. The way I'm meeting is different. It's okay.
Can we look at the minutes of the 22nd of October?
Yes, ma'am, we just want to indicate, to correct the date on the minutes, the day 22nd, which is 4th June. It's actually meant to be 22nd October. But the content is correct, as far as we're concerned.
Okay. Can we look at the first page of the minutes? Are there any amendments on anything, any correction? Page 2,
page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Page 9. May I have a motion for the adoption of the minutes, the correct record? And correct time, I will talk about the answer for the move of the minutes. Honorable Jigiza.
Madam Speaker, I move the adoption of the minutes.
I see Honorable Boy supports, seconds the adoption of the minutes as a correct record, and I haven't seen any opposition to it, and therefore the minutes have been adopted. We now move to matters arising. Council.
And honourable members, the issues that were discussed at the meeting of the 22nd October have since been acted upon and were implemented. The one related to the adjustment of the formula for WIPS, the formula was accordingly adjusted in terms of the agreement of this committee and implemented. The issue of how smaller parties participate in committees was raised, and the understanding was that the smaller parties themselves will coordinate their participation in the various committees. There was also a request for the matter to be monitored, so to say, from the perspective of the speaker, so that if there are any issues that arise in that process, they could be raised with the speaker. The second issue that was discussed related to guidelines for motions without notice. There was an extensive discussion on the guidelines. Ultimately, the guidelines were agreed to with adjustments, and they set before the House. And of course, the issue of the guidelines and how motions are noticed are dealt with will be canvassed during the amendment process and discussions. So that issue was also acted upon. The next issue related to party responses to several statements. There were two issues there, whether we should stick to 3 minutes per party or there should be time allocation decided proportionally, and eventually it was decided that there would be time allocated to Mr. Ross' statements, and the sequence of parties and the allocation was decided at the meeting, and that decision has since been implemented. Thank you, ma'am.
Are there any additional issues that members would like to raise as matters arising from the minutes? Thank you. I see that there are none. May we move to item 5, whereupon I would like to ask Honorable Mitatane, the chair of the subcommittee on the review of rules. Before you start, Honorable Mitatane, Mr. Castle would like to just give a brief report.
Ma'am and honorable members, we, last night, if I'm correct, we received 2 submissions from the Equal Freedom Fighters, and copies of which have been made and circulated. Tim, am I correct? Circulated. Yes, have been circulated. This committee will then have to decide how it deals with the submissions received. Thank you.
Will you comment on the worship of Spain submission? Okay. Honorable Mutakan.
Thank you very much, Honorable Speaker. and then honorable members of the National Assembly and colleagues, and again, I know that when we are about to reach 60, sometimes we make mistakes in terms of timing, and my sincere apologies when I will speak. Not my secretary wrote to 9 days when it is 9. And Speaker, we want to make this proposal on the rules. I think we have circulated them to all members. And then also there's a short report that I'll talk to. And then also we are going to deal with the rules. Our view as a subcommittee is that when we present the rules, at least it will be fair for us to do that chapter by chapter. Because it makes it easy for us to follow the logic and also the development of the rules over the last 20 years. And the subcommittee, Honorable Speaker, was set up in 2013 by then Speaker Honorable Sisulu. In the subcommittee of the rules, the Committee of the National Assembly, was mandated to look comprehensively on the question of the National Assembly rules as a stand and what are the guidelines that should be used as we develop the new or review the rules of the National Assembly. Then the committee set up what we call a working group or a task team. That task team started in 2018. They produced what we referred to is a very big document that was a product of the task team. And then I want to request members really to have their copies, because they discuss chapter by chapter. They'll be more or less ready to be persuaded to look at the copy, because these three copies are very important for members of parliament to know exactly what was the logic and the purpose of the rules as they were reviewed and drafted. I think we always invite them. But also, Speaker, just to say also that the task team or the team, the subcommittee of the rules, of the review of the rules, made it to areas when we started to work first. What we acknowledge that Parliament represents the South African society as a whole. That the aspirations, the dreams, and the desires of the people of South Africa are represented by Parliament. Therefore, Parliament is the important organ state. That then there are issues that we must be addressing on how we deal with the question of review of the rules. The point was raised, Honorable Speaker, that Parliament is a multi-party body. And therefore, whatever we do in Parliament is extra directed by multi-party board. The point also was raised that Parliament is a very important body that we should always try to consensus. Because of bearing in mind that there's always inbuilt majority decision-making structures. And that because we are South African, generally we are known now all over the world as people who have mastered the art of negotiation and the art of engagement. I think that was an issue that was raised. It was also raised that all other organs of aid, broadly speaking, are come to Parliament. Generally speaking, that we are lawmakers, we do oversight, we do all this. Therefore, Parliament is a very important organ of state that represents all the aspirations of all South Africans and then their desires and their dreams. And then the 1994 Democratic Parliament as was elected, we all know that we inherited the rules and orders of the previous legislature. Of course, previous legislature meaning Parliament, the previous Parliament. And then, of course, the fund changes, but very minor changes, really, in 1994-1995. There was a question of the rules, covering questions, committee system, the legislative process, and the processing and the written instrument were finalized in 1997. Simply means that Chapter 10 to Chapter 15 were reworked from 1997. We need to the adoption of the permanent constitution, or the constitution of 1996. Then the team was set up by the National Assembly to look at the rules. But they only dealt with Chapter 10 to Chapter 50. Then 1 to 9 were never touched. That's why then the subcommittee realized that the best thing to do is to start with Chapter 1 to Chapter 9, because those rules were inherited from the previous non-democratic parliament. Therefore, that was really the main purpose why we ended up studying the Windhoek area of work. And we have been working on this matter, Honorable Speaker, from 2013. It has been a very tedious but a very important process. Very slow sometimes, but I do think that sometimes we over-consult. I take upon that consultation is extremely important, but I think we have done everything to consult parties, expect them to come back to the committee, give their views. And on point two, we are just making a point that in terms of the report, the very short report that I'm talking to, and that their house then cover all sessions, and we deal with the special national assembly. We reassess the procedures to ensure that they allow the legislature to optimally decide his responsibility. That's one area also of the review of the rules. That ensures that the parliament does its work effectively and efficiently. That's the point that was made. But on 2012, when I was speaker, the Rules Committee then mandated this subcommittee that is reporting today to look at the question and of the review of the rules of the National Assembly. And then we undertook that. And then at the time, of course, the Rules Committee said to us, there are a number of drivers of the process to review the rules of the National Assembly. Just a few of them that were cited. Was that they need to determine how the Assembly wants to give expression to being an African parliament, an activist parliament, and a people's parliament. And then upon that, the rule of the National Assembly must capture this. They must be very clear that it is a people's parliament, because the National Assembly is directly representing the people. Those members of parliament are elected directly. Of course, it's proportional, but before the election takes place, all parties are required by law to submit the list of their candidates. When people vote in South Africa, they know exactly the names of candidates who are put by parties. That's why we make a point. These are people who are directly elected. Therefore, they represent a broader society. That's the point that we're making there. And we have prepared then our work for some time, and then the team was set up. And all my members of parliament were also invited to participate. I know that Honorable Mike Ellis, Honorable Sintin, the former member of the IFP, there were five members really who were always coming there to assist the task team as we were trying then to build the real substantive issue of the review of the rules. And that was a very exciting exercise then. But also the Parliament, the National Assembly also took decision to invite other organizations outside Parliament that are interested in parliamentary work and parliamentary democracy. Lots of submissions were submitted by this organization. Some submissions, of course, were about the substantive issues, but some were procedural issues, but some were broad political issues about the understanding of this foundation and other organizations that are not in Parliament to assist us to achieve the question of the review of comprehensive review of the rules. And the team identified a number of issues that were underpinning it. The point that we are raising that there are practices and conventions in all parliaments in all over the world. A lot of research also were conducted to understand the African Parliament and then European Parliament in Asia, Parliament in Latin America and other areas, just to learn to understand what is the parliamentary democracy all about. Given the fact that to us we are constitutional democracy, therefore everything that we do in terms of the rules must be in line with the supreme law of the country to the constitution. And the issue then was raised that whatever we do, we must be mindful that the constitutional democracy, whatever we learn from other parliaments, must be adapted to our own condition as the South African National Assembly. And there many information then we were given all the copies. I think we ended up in understanding how the Westminster system, how the French system, and all other systems or parliamentary systems that are there. And then we understood, therefore, that we must have our own unique way of doing things as the National Assembly in the South African context. As a result of that, some of these rules then were proposed in terms of the substantialness of the rules, but also on the substantiveness of the rules, but also on procedural matters that were raised. The point that was also emphasized, that the rules are there not to manage politics, because managers of politics are political leadership of institutions and the whips. But the rules are there to ensure that Parliament has the ability to regulate the engagement of those who are deployed in politics. That point was raised in society, that we should design the rules in such a way that the people who manage politics in Parliament, they are able to do anything except to read the rules. But they must be able to manage politics outside using the rules, because the rules are there to enable the leadership of Parliament to regulate how we engage and also we do things in Parliament. The point was really emphasized that we should trust the rules, also for a current situation, we should trust the rules that will last long, that will withstand the test of time, that the rules are not going to be suspended each and every time, because the rules are not trusted according to what we call them, we should withstand the test of time. That was the point that was also emphasized. And the point that was raised, Honorable Speaker, was that then we have this preparation for 2014. We're joined then in 2014 by Honorable Members, Honorable Gadi in the IF and the EFF, and then Honorable Tinker Schaefer in the DA and other colleagues. But of course, more parties, Congress Speaker, Honorable Speaker, were coming and going. They didn't have capacity to remain in all meetings of the subcommittee. But they're very nature, really. I think it was very demanding, but also a very small party, the other committee. But the major parties here in Parliament sat in those meetings actually there. In fact, the Gadi sat there, and the Jabalala sat there. A lot of discussion, I will speak on this, I think was a very passive, participatory decision-making process in terms of making a recommendation for this committee. And then sometimes we over-elaborate on some of the issues, because the view always that you should reach consensus rather than do anything that is not going to be according to the consensus making that we have already developed in South Africa over the 20 years of our existence as a new republic. And the point was raised, and I will speak at that, we must ensure that at least we should submit a report to the Rules Committee with one intention. The intention is that once the Rules Committee has considered the report, have discussion on the chapter by chapter, if the Rules Committee identify areas that still need some work, then the subcommittee can go back and rework on them. But if the Rules Committee take a view that they are satisfied with the work that has been done over the last 2 years, then they approve it, then it becomes a recommendation of the Rules Committee that is sent back to parties for their last comment. Because the view that parties have been given this opportunity many times. In fact, all members of Parliament in the last Parliament, that is 2014, they were given this source document. All members of Parliament were given a source document. It was given to them for everyone. And then members were invited as individual members, but also as collective in the party, that if they do have views around their review of the rules, they can go to their offices of chief whips and submit their proposal, and those who represent them in the subcommittee then will come with the proposal and present them in the subcommittee. We thought that was going to be mass participation, and every member was going to do that, but of course we surprised that very few members, in fact, because members took a view on our speaker that we are there, we are mandated by the Rules Committee to do their work. Once they've done their work, then we'll take a final decision and adopt it in the chamber. Then we thought that everyone was going to be participating full on this, but I think the rules sometimes are very detailed. But also we have never mastered the art that the rules are politics. They are not just the outside politics, they are politics of managing the entire institution. Because Parliament by its very nature is a political vote, is a deliberative vote. There was a political vote that engaged on that. But every member, as far as you know, Honorable Speaker, they have their copies. Parties were requested in 2018. To convene a workshop. If they need the staff that was assisting us, they'll go there and take them through. I know that many parties convene their workshops, and then they have their own views. They presented their views on the subcommittee. When the subcommittee was finalizing, then the drafting after the testing, we're considering all the views that were presented by various parties. But again, to be honest, not every party was able to have capacity to look at that situation. I think it's a very difficult one. That's why, Honorable Speaker, we are proposing that if your meeting, Honorable Speaker, agrees, that then we can take the team chapter by chapter and raise some of the issues there. But we have also identified, Honorable Speaker, the rules that we think are very important. We are not saying, and then taking a point of call, but also Honorable Ambrosin was part of the task team, Honorable Sin, and Honorable Ambrosin will come with files and files of information and discuss every issue. They have a rule, Honorable Speaker, that 230 sub-headings, but there are 1,700 rules, and every rule was looked at with a view first to determine what is the relevant of the rule, and then what is the meaning of the rule, and what is the purpose intended by the rule. And that a long discussion about some of the rules, in fact, if the rule that is equal, and then I thought that was the easiest one, but ended up becoming a real difficult rule, because people will come with many views on some of the issues of the coronavirus issue. We have then identified what we call the rules that are about 126. It's a one-pager, and hopefully circulated to our colleagues. It's just a one-pager, really, that assists us to say this is an area that we think maybe the Rules Committee may have more discussion on. The Rules Committee may take a view to say that every issue that we have studied, but we thought we should not really for the Rules Committee to deal with all the details that have taken almost two years to do, but it should capture the real issues, the real difficult issues in terms of the chapter that are there. In areas where there were no, in fact, there were consensus on many of the rules, and then there were consensus on them. But there will be areas when there were no agreement, and therefore we are going to highlight them and give the options. Based on the options, then we hope that the Rules Committee will then consider and see what is the appropriate option for the rules work. Then the issue, speak around the suspensions of the rules, will deal with that one as we come in. If Honorable Speaker wants us to go then chapter by chapter, I think then we can start with one and then move on, just to ensure that we go along with the Honorable Members. But we have circulated them, the Honorable Speaker, for some, and then that's what we are proposing.
Are you saying, Honorable Takani, thank you very much for your presentation, that we can either prioritize the rules that have been highlighted in this rules document, which in the view of the subcommittee were the areas on which they suggest to the rules committee that we have prioritized, focused, and once we have sorted these, we can then go through the rest of the chapters that have been covered. May I put that issue for the meeting to hear whether we agree on that approach of first dealing with the sticking points, what looks to me or sounds to me like the area that we still need more discussion in order to find one another, and then we go chapter by chapter where we will still probably come across these issues. Honorable Shibambu.
Thanks, Speaker. We made a request in the subcommittee to review the rules of the National Assembly, that the rules of the National Assembly have got 15 chapters and addendums and schedules. And all those rules from chapter 1 to chapter 15, they speak to each other. In one way or another, they have some sense of interlinkages. And the committee, which was mandated to review these rules, only dealt with chapter 1 to chapter 9 and couldn't go away. I'm hearing for the first time that there was a different process from 2 years ago from the chapters. It didn't indicate that when we raised this point that can we let the committee, which has been mandated to review the rules of the National Assembly, complete its work and present a comprehensive, complete proposal that this is what we are recommending should be reviewed, so that all the aspects to each other. And then that is when the Rules Committee can then go chapter by chapter to say that we are satisfied with all these other issues that have been dealt with. But two, I think also we should do what the subversion of the subcommittee was done on calling for public input in terms of some of the areas. I don't remember the subcommittee being told that there are public inputs, that there's an organization that made input on their rules book.
possibly we could have not got a proper report about that. But I'm thinking that we could do that. But the last issue is that we made the request in the subcommittee that Parliament is in recess in terms of its day-to-day activities and programs. Can we be allowed to then go and consult with our caucuses and then establish sufficient consensus in the subcommittee which is responsible for the review of the rules? And then on areas that are of disagreement, we'll then come to this rules committee to indicate that with regards to secret ballot, there is a proposal that there must be secret ballot, but there was a view that it must remain as is. And then the rules committee can then highlight those, and then before presentation to the National Assembly, all those areas are covered. I think that the presentation of this report is premature because we've not exhausted the rules which speak to each other, the whole book which we have to deal with, and we've not yet established adequate consensus on areas which we could agree on. I don't think that it is that bad that we cannot agree on some of the critical issues, because in any way Parliament must go ahead, but let us establish adequate consensus, not steamroll this process in a way that will not help the progress of Parliament. That is our most sincere and humble request, Honourable Speaker.
Thanks, Honourable Jambu. Honourable Boy, Honourable Sidiza, and then Zabute.
Madam Speaker, some of the issues that Honourable is raising were raised in the subcommittee, and we reflected on them. And quite clearly, for us, it was quite important for us to come and report to the Rules Committee the work that we have done. The part that I really don't understand is to steamroll when we have been debating and quite extensively allowing each other to raise opinions. We haven't had no stage with anybody in steamroll. And quite clearly, that consensus, there are issues that the EFF should say that this is where we didn't have agreements, rather than generalizing and see all parties don't agree on some of those issues. There are issues that is that let's set them open and let's have a discussion on it. And we've given that opportunity to happen. But we said the process should not hold back. Let's give each other an opportunity to do the presentation and we all move together. But it's the decision of the Rules Committee that will decide what do we do when we arrive at this particular level. Do they want us to do other chapters, or we submit the work that has been done? And we are here to submit the work that has been done. And consultations and everything, submissions by parties, has been happening quite over some time, my honourable, and we're quite aware. If you were not there, we've been doing the work consistently.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. On the question you raised and the recommendation made by the chairperson of the subcommittee, my proposal would be let's deal with those issues that have been highlighted, and we will then thereafter go back to the chapter by chapter. On the second matter that has been raised by Honourable Shibambo and responded to by Honourable Boy, I would submit that given that we are meeting as the Rules Committee and this is the subcommittee, it would be prudent in my view that the Rules Committee, as it's sitting, do get a progress report from the subcommittee on the work that has been done so far. We can also, as the Rules Committee, flag some of the issues maybe which the subcommittee may not have reflected on in their work, which they can then take up. But also, as the chairperson of the subcommittee himself has said, that even after this process, the Rules Committee can well decide to take matters back to the subcommittee and even have an opportunity for parties to again look at the progress report and then come back to the Rules Committee. While I note the observation made by Honourable Shibambo, I don't think it would take anything away to have this progress report today, and then we can apply ourselves as the Rules Committee on how we proceed thereafter. Thank you, Honourable Shibambo.
Honourable Speaker, I think I've been covered by the two comrades. Thanks.
Honourable Josie and Honourable CNA.
Thanks, Chairperson. Well, I think that's the latest speaker reconciliatory, in that we can be able to receive progress reports, but the principle, it seems to me, that we must not bend on is the proposal made by the presenter of the report that we must take decisions. We must hear progress report, but because the rules work as a comprehensive unit, as a principle, then we must consider the report as incomplete. Because we'll take decisions prematurely about specific rules. So I think that it's proper for us to receive the report, debate, also to keep track on the progress of the subcommittee. But we mustn't take a decision on anything as yet until there's a comprehensive review of all the rules and that they all fit each other. I think I just wanted to highlight that as a matter of principles. I think that's what the proposal at least of Honorable Shivambu is based on, not to reject the progress report. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, it was certainly the Democratic Alliance's understanding about where we're at today, that what this enables us to now do is to get the progress report. There's some matters in here where, you know, we also, you know, need to look to a bit of further examination into as well. But at least what it does is gives us an opportunity to start the process within our caucus as well, in terms of engagements around these rule changes. So my understanding is we're going to get the progress report today. The subcommittee will continue with its work. We will start an engagement process within our caucuses, and then we'll obviously come back once there's a comprehensive set and adopt them as a set of rules. That's my understanding of where we are today, and I think that's certainly where I think the majority of members around this table are at as well. So I think we do have to get this process, we do have to get the process moving though, because we do know that the rules and the application thereof have been a source of conflict in the House. So the sooner we get a set of rules of engagement that are of a general application in place, that there is broad consensus amongst the political parties, we certainly aren't going to agree on everything, and I think we must accept that. And the sooner we have that in place, I think the sooner we're going to have a more effective and functioning Parliament, and we are able to remove some of the impediments that are holding us back in sittings and functioning of the House.
So we will take that the process is at least making sure that at the level of the Rules Committee, we definitely know what has been under discussion at the level of the subcommittee. I am keen that indeed we finish right up to chapter 15, Mr. Mitarane, Honorable Mitarane, and would like to hear from you what must we hope we can do in what kind of timeline, because the sooner we make progress with all chapters of the rule book and the sooner we can adopt them, so that we now know that we have a rule book we can start to implement firmly on the basis of maximum processing of issues thrown up by the rules, the better for our own functioning as an institution. So I really would like us to move the process as fast as possible. The support for the idea of us dealing with the key issues and then coming back to start with the chapters. Is that agreed? Okay. Honorable, I saw your hand.
Honorable Speaker, I think your view of the subcommittee is that we are presenting this for subcommittee, for the Rules Committee to consider. One thing that they must consider, what are the areas that they want to refer back to the subcommittee? Because we said that can't be right that we deal with the rules for 10 years without progress, without closure. Can never be right, otherwise we become ineffective as Parliament. Everything is called delay, parties that give enough time, but we're giving a whole year to make proposals on the rules, drafting a tale. No party came in general to do that, but I know that other parties had their level there. Our view is that today, they are going to present progress report. It's work in progress. We present it here. The rules committee look at it and have discussion on it and identify areas that we want to refer back to us. Because it would be unfair for a subcommittee to go back on something that we thought we have done, when the rules committee don't say, in this point, you can go back and re-look at it. We think we have not done a good job on this and this year. Therefore, there should be guidance that is given at the Rules Committee. That is where the intention. Another intention is that once the Rules Committee have looked at it and consider and say that parties, then you can go and consider this now. It's almost a recommendation that comes from the Rules Committee. We thought that that's the way to approach it, because if we go back as the subcommittee on some work that we have done without some guidance from the leadership here, yeah, what are the areas that we must go and consider more, will be very difficult for us to do. Because as far as we are concerned, from 1 to 9, we have done the work that we are supposed to do. And what we expect now is the collective wisdom of this leadership to tell us on rule, on suspension, we think we are wrong. We must go back and look at it. In other areas, I think the rules committee may take a good that we accept your recommendation. But accepting the recommendations doesn't mean that every party should then agree or not agree on this matter. The rule that we're taking is that once there's sufficient consensus among the parties, and hopefully we want all parties to agree, but we'll be able to when we won't agree, all of us on the issue. Therefore, we are going to run the issue to the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee would at a certain point in time agree on that. But our view, Honourable Speaker, that if the Rules Committee can identify one or two things referring to us, we are here for that. And because clear mandate is always necessary for us to be clear in our mind what is it that we have to do. But we are prepared to ensure that by April, the entire rule book is worked. And then our view is that chapter 10 to 15, they've been worked before. A lot of work has been done. Of course, there'll be other parties who have joined us in the National Assembly, they want to look at them. They are fine to do so. But our view that by April, and April, Honourable Speaker, will be through with all the chapters. But we think on this one that we have done a comprehensive work. It's important for leadership to apply its mind and then say to us, go back to this one and this one. At least when we go back, we know exactly what would be expected from us. I think that's the point that we're trying to do. Of course, you have noticed, Honourable Speaker, that there will be parties there that joined us after we have started the process long time ago. We had workshop, though, Honourable Speaker, to induct new parties on the work that we have done in terms of the rules. And then we have really a whole day workshop, just taking all the parties who joined after May to say we are here now. These are issues, these are contentious issues, these are substantive issues. There was a discussion around some of these issues. But Chair, I think the decision, Honourable Speaker, always would be.
Honourable Shibamu.
Honourable Speaker, I thought you had given us adequate guidance in terms of how we should proceed. I know this the first Rules Committee of the Fifth Democratic Parliament. I was part of that in the E249. Established this subcommittee on the review of the rules of the National Assembly. It did not say that we must go and review Chapter 1 to 9. It said the mandate was very clear. You can go back to the minutes. Honourable Mbaka had to check what was the mandate of the subcommittee. It was very clear that we must go and review the rules of the National Assembly. We obviously would have disagreements in terms of other areas and there's nothing wrong with that. But let us at least honor the mandate that we have been given and present a complete review of the rules of the National Assembly. There's nothing wrong, yes, but I think it's a waste of time to give piecemeal reports which I'm sure would be a report that we're going to talk to, we can allow members of the Rules Committee to look into it. And then when we come, we then present a comprehensive report. And to show that some of the areas we have not yet exhaustively dealt with is the fact that there are even some chapters which we couldn't make substantial submissions as the ESS, and then you should that we must go and must can make the submissions here in the Rules Committee. They are basically then taking the work of the subcommittee to be now the work of the Rules Committee. Because we can patiently make the submissions in the subcommittee and then we summarize what is our position so that when we come to the Rules Committee we say that here are the two options out of the decisions that ensued in the subcommittee. Without having to then go through submission on the powers of the Speaker, on whether he police or protection service must enter their house whenever there's verbal disagreement and all those things. We can be able to exhaustively deal with those issues in the subcommittee. And here we present that here is a reviewed book and the areas of disagreement are the following. And it's not even a lot. I don't think it's over more than 20. We can illustrate that these are the areas where there's disagreement, and the Rules Committee can take a decision based on what we've completed. And then we take this process forward. And the good thing is that I don't think the Honorable Dagana should take joy that she's not committed and everything. I think we're all invigorated now. The DA is thinking about conducting this caucus. The AFS thing about the same thing, the ISP, it will be ideal that all members of parliament, the 400 members of parliament, have in one way or another directly interacted with this process of reviewing of the rules, not just subcommittees which are going to just adopt ultimately a rules book through a vote. It's not ideal. Let us try to establish consensus and put on this process all of us before we present the comprehensive report, and then we'll be able to take this process for Honorable Speaker.
Honorable C, as you take the floor, I have to say this, that I thought, Honorable Shivam, that the fact we're closer to one another in the things that people are saying than what you sound like, you know, is your understanding. I thought we're agreeing on the approach of how we process the progress report of the subcommittee, because it's only a progress report. It's not a report that's saying we've finished everything. But we can't pretend there's no work that has been done by the subcommittee. So it's giving us a progress report on the basis of which we'll continue moving and hopefully accelerate this process of considering the rules. Honorable thing?
Thank you, Honorable Speaker. No, I agree with you entirely that the subcommittee should be given the right to present its progress report to this plenary. After all, we are a subcommittee of plenary. And in the subcommittee, we identified issues that would require the wisdom of this plenary. And that's why we are here today and tomorrow to get the particular wisdom. But having said that, Honorable Speaker, I think we need not forget that in looking at the rules and in not adopting all the chapters, there are grey areas in the rules. There are areas open to different interpretations. We had challenges with the application of these rules last year. And those areas, as we move forward, need to be flagged, and we need to come up with ways of dealing with those areas so that Parliament can continue to function in an orderly manner. And we know some of those areas, the question of declarations, the question of motions without notice. I think we must address them. We had reports put before the House. They were adopted by the House. But in the subcommittee on rules, we found that there were still different views. So I think, Honorable Subcommittee, that we need to identify those and present them to the Rules Committee at some stage so Parliament can continue to function in an orderly manner. Thank you.
Can I appeal to the Honorable Members who have their hands up to allow us to move so we get into the actual substantive discussions of the rules and what they relate to how they're supposed to assist us in running the affairs and the business of the house. Can I move? Okay.
Honorable Speaker, I just want to indicate to members that this document by the subcommittee on the review of rules is up to chapter 50. So if we can check on this one, if you have it. The unfortunate part is that we have some members who will come today, then the next day they are not there. So they must try to get this book.
Okay. All right, Honorable Members. We will do all chapters at the end of this process. We will have done right up to chapter 15. So please don't utter what she's saying as if we're here about ping pong. Please, man. Okay, let's go to this document. What are the issues?
Madam Speaker?
Yes. Honorable Mulder?
You're referring to this document. I just want to be clear, what document are we now talking about?
We're dealing with the document which comes from the subcommittee presenting what they say were the rules around which there were lots of discussion and difficulty. It's called substantive proposed rule changes members may wish to focus on at this meeting. Substantive proposed rule changes. National Assembly review of rules, substantive. I hope it has been circulated.
It was given as part of the submission.
Okay.
But you can always make copies if
members
don't have it.
And we ask the chair to take us through the document.
Honorable Speaker, the colleagues who are here, who are part of the subcommittee, they will intervene from time to time and assist to and our team, CAS 5 here, another team has to address some of the technical issues that we addressed there. On the definition, though, we have just said that we have not finalized all of them, Honorable Speaker, because we have to deal with chapter 10 to chapter 15, but we have work. There's a lot of work that has been done on the definition. On the rule suspension, is an issue that we are raising, that the rules of Parliament are very important. They are very important. They should be suspended anyhow. That we will find it very difficult because of poor planning, and therefore we suspend the rules of the National Assembly. That sometimes there is a very urgent issue that was not put on the order paper or agenda of Parliament to suspend the rules of Parliament. We thought that we needed to have a special majority when you suspend the rules of Parliament. And I know that Honorable Boy, every time you stand up and move for the suspension of Rule 4, Rule 5, then to change the order of the agenda or the order of the paper, we thought that it can't be right for the rules for them to be respected by entire membership of Parliament. They should not be amended in ad hoc. They must also not be suspended ad hoc. There should be a real reason why Honorable Boy would want to suspend the rules. The point that we are raising on that one is that we need the majority like we pass the bills. And then simply means that you don't go to the chamber, we are 15, and you suspend the rules, and then you continue. There must be a special majority, 50 plus one of members present at the meeting at the chamber. They must take a decision if they agree that the rule 4 must be suspended because of this reason. But we thought that it's important for a member who move for the suspension of the rules to give reasons. Because as members of Parliament, we must be convinced that the suspension of the rule is serving the purpose of Parliament. It's not just suspension because it's poor planning. That's an issue that we have raised on the special majority on that. But my colleagues are here, they will also add on some of the issues on point that we may not touch. And that's the rule that we thought. Generally, there was consensus in the subcommittee, Honorable Speaker, on this one. There was no objection on that. The Honorable Garden at the time was representing the AFF, was hit with this. And then all of us were happy. There was a thorough discussion about this matter. The point that was raised, Honorable Speaker, was that it's not going to delay then the functioning of Parliament if we refuse the suspension on rules. And then people take a view that the rules are too important because they regulate the engagement of politics in the chamber. You can't suspend them willy-nilly because then they are no longer useful in terms of the overall work of the Parliament. That is an issue that was raised, and then there was an option on that initially, but in our last meeting we agreed that the suspension of the rule will need a special majority, at least 50 plus one of members present in the chamber, should take a decision to ensure that they will suspend the rule. And the issue that we are raising, because the collective leadership here must think whether it's not going to cast strain, constrain the parliamentary work, that then we have to wait for majority of members in the chamber for them to decide whether we suspend Rule 4 because it's an urgent matter. But before that, there's a rule of eventuality, unforeseen eventuality. If it's something that was unplanned because of poor planning, the rules should not be suspended for that purpose. They should only be dealt with a special majority, 50 plus one of the present member in the chamber, when a decision is made. We thought that is the issue that we wanted to put forward. Maybe a minor issue sometimes, but we thought we should really just hear the views of the leadership here. And then on opening of Parliament, the discussion that we had about this matter, one issue was just to see whether the state of the nation addresses the real opening of parliament, or the parliament is open long before the state of the nation address. The view then was that we must separate the whole. You must have what is called the opening of parliament when the speaker at the last sitting of parliament curriculum says the next work of parliament will start in February or March, whatever time. And then that we don't really link the state of the nation address with the opening of parliament. Because before the state of address, in fact, is on the 12th, already parliament has been waiting. Was not waiting until the opening and then the delivery of the state of the nation address. That is rule 9A in terms of the proposal. And then honorable members will look at rule 9A and think whether this rule 9A is helpful for us to address this issue of separating the two. I think 9A is opening of parliament, and then we move on and deal with the 10A there, we deal with the president's state of the nation address. It's on page 12 on our document, page 12 on our document. Those are issues that are there, and then colleagues must look at it and see whether it's appropriate or not. And then rule covering general authority of the speaker. And then is rule 17A.
Madam Speaker?
Yeah.
I'm just wondering whether we should not deal with these very often. And if there's agreement, we agree. If we need to take it back to principles and all that, then we say so. But to deal with it in the manner that has been presented to us, it's a proposal.
We could do that, but it might just take us much longer to stop at everyone. On taking back to the caucuses, I assume that, in fact, that's what we're saying. That we will do everything here, then we take it to our caucuses, so that members of parliament are brought on board, basically on the general changes that we have introduced to the rules. But I can go one by one, fine. Honourable.
Madam Speaker, I think that one of the objectives is not only bring the NAP, the National Assembly Rules Committee, up to speed. I think it's also to give the subcommittee guidance on the matter.
Mm.
So I think it is important that we perhaps follow what Honourable Singh is suggesting,
okay,
and deal with them on one, because then, you know, if there's still a deadlock on it, then it needs to go back and the Honourable Ndikana and his committee can grapple with it again there. And we can also then perhaps take it back to our caucuses and then make further submissions to the subcommittee if necessary.
Okay. All right, let's go back to the second rule. Because you said definitions you are still working on, and then sources of authority, that's number two for me here in this document. Anything on sources of authority and confusion? Okay, let's go to rule suspension. It's the rule that deals with there being at least an agreed majority before a rule is suspended. It shouldn't be easy to just suspend a rule. Yes, Madam.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Yes, Madam Speaker, this was one of the issues that we grappled with in the committee, because if one looks at a simple majority, which is 50% plus one, you do end up in a bit of a dangerous position for Parliament, where a rule can be suspended, forgive me for saying it, but willy-nilly, by 50% plus one majority, because that would mean that the ruling party could then suspend any rule if they had a quorum in the House. So I think we do as a committee to discuss looking at a special majority for a suspension of the rule, and it is one of the issues that we said we would bring to this committee for the joint wisdom of all the parties and all the members here present to assist our committee when we go back and do the deliberations.
Are there any other inputs on that issue? Yes, Honourable.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Speaker. I think we could take it back, but in fact this progress, if we analyse the current rules before Parliament, no special such provision is existing in the current rules. So this is already progress. So we take it back and we can talk about it, but usually the general principle is a majority of members must be present when any bill is adopted. And we wanted to have the same revision when it comes to our rules. So our consensus so far was that no special majorities, but we can take it back. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Speaker, just to add to what the Honourable Killian has said, I think we must, the subcommittee must also be mindful of the number of members present in the House when certain decisions are taken, so that we don't create a special majority that is completely out of sync with the established norms when we pass legislation or to deal with matters for interest. If you want to amend the Constitution, special majorities be required, and a few other things. So the subcommittee must just be aware of that. My opinion, without having discussed it with anyone, is that as it is worded, that it should be 50 plus 1 should be sufficient in dealing with the matter, keeping in mind that the application of that rule as well will not be willy-nilly.
The current position with rules is that a third of members must be present. The current position is that a third of members must be present to take any decision other than on bills. That's in terms of the Constitution, one third of members to be present. And then the majority of those voting in favour will decide the issue. So this proposal is to have the same minimum requirement of members present as with bills, which is 50% plus one. And then the majority of those must be in favour. So to raise this rules, both suspension and amendment and adoption, to the level of bills. Thank you.
Honourable Waters?
Chair, my view, and I haven't discussed it with my colleagues either, is that the subcommittee should take into account that what it does do, just by having 50% plus one, it allows the majority party of the day to suspend any rule they like at any time. And it does. And so therefore you need to have mechanisms in place, a safety net that would also protect minority parties, and therefore I would like the subcommittee to look at, maybe they can find examples around the world, I don't know, that where there's two-thirds is needed, or 60%, or something. You know, just take it above that simple threshold of 50% plus one. Thank you.
Honourable Carter.
Speaker, this is, and it becomes a very difficult situation because we've got to look at the text, we've got to protect ourselves with decisions and rules that can just be, but we've seen with legislation changes, you're always working on a 50% as one. So you've got to, you know, we've got to ask ourselves the question, what is more important, passing of legislation or deciding that, listen, a rule is going to change the order of the day of the order paper? So I really think let's take it back, let's have discussions on it, but you know, let's just get to a point where, and I really want to make another call, Madam Speaker, that you know, we sometimes get to a point where we actually reach consensus on issues. Then one member comes and makes a comment that actually just shows everything that everyone has said, it just causes confusion again. I really want to make a request that everyone sort of think before you say something, because it just opens the whole thing up again, and at the end of the day we are saying exactly the same thing.
Honourable Killian, then Honourable Mulder.
Thank you, Chairperson. We will certainly take that to heart. I think just to keep on referring to a current practice that we need a third of the members present, and that currently any rule may be suspended by the position of the House, whether it affects the House or any of its committees. It can be by an ordinary majority of a third of the members present. Now, Chairperson, I hear what the Honourable Waters is saying, but I just want to say that the same provision exists in Western Cape rules, where an ordinary majority can suspend the rules of the Western Cape legislature. So that is a provision that is normally contained in all rules of legislatures. You don't need a special majority. But as I said, we are quite prepared to look at it again. Thank you.
Honourable Speaker, I don't think we should introduce provincial legislatures rules. We can bring eight other provinces as well, and I think we're going to get anywhere. What the Honourable Card is saying with regard to consensus, it may be so that one member would like to speak, maybe that member wants to make a good contribution, then you should listen as well. I can understand the concern to say that a simple majority can amend any rule. That should not be the case, because the problem is the rules are almost like constitution. They are the basic agreed-upon groundwork in terms of which Parliament functions, and it should not be correct that a simple majority can change those rules of the game. I think the answer lies in the proposed section 3.1, because it refers any provision of the rules relating to the business or proceedings at the sitting of the House.
And if it refers the proceedings and the process, business of day, etc., then it shouldn't be a problem to have a simple majority. If it comes to the fundamental rules in general, then it comes a problem. So the solution may be that the subcommittee looks at what do we mean with the business or proceedings and define that, then it shouldn't be a problem.
Does that help us? Okay. All right. Can we now then go to the opening of Parliament matter? Maybe I can make an input, because I'm also a member of Parliament, to say the occasion of the State of the Nation address is the opening of Parliament is simply inaccurate, because we've long been here. Quite early in January we've been working, so Parliament has been open. Now, how you deal with it in the rules, I leave it to your wisdom.
When I was speaking, it seems that we are supporting our view in terms of how we accepted it now. Separating State of the Nation from the opening of Parliament, I think we are happy with that. If the meeting is happy with that, then I think we will take it forward.
Yes, Chairperson. The amendment is fine. It has been an inaccurate confusion that, you know, because it's about Parliament, it's not about the union building or the cabinet. It's actually a proper differentiation which allowed us to can decide differently next year how we open Parliament. We'll open it using a different mechanism. Thank you.
We are now introducing a different discussion.
Speaker, can I just draw the attention of members to the proposed new rule
9A.
The proposed new rule 9A. That specifically makes provision for a formal opening of Parliament once in the 5-year life of a Parliament. So immediately after the first general elections and after members have been sworn in, there will be an opening of Parliament by the President addressing Parliament. That is the first and only time when he will open Parliament. That's the proposal in 9A. After that, on an annual basis, there will be State of the Nation address, which doesn't constitute any opening of Parliament. So that is the new idea that is coming.
I think the subcommittee must consider the suggestion made by CASPA. So open at the start of the term, which is a 5-year term, and then annually is the State of the Nation address. And you don't make an issue about the fact that now, in this new year, we've started to go to work. Why must we have a party about that? Honorable Kulisa?
I tend to withdraw my submission, Honorable Speaker, because I was of the opinion that the subcommittee made a good stride on it by saying that there are two different issues, opening of Parliament and State of the Nation address. But perhaps we could look into the other input as well that is coming just now. Thank you.
Rule covering general authority of Speaker, 17A. Ooh, God forbid. Must she have any authority?
No. Yes, Honorable Speaker, I was on the issue of the opening of Parliament, the State of the Nation address. I was just on that item particularly.
I'm really
okay.
I passed. I'm on the next issue. The 17A.
No, Honorable Speaker, that's the new area that we are introducing. Of course, it's taken out of the Constitution, generally speaking. That would be good for us in our rules to state the general authority and responsibility of the Speaker. We have then highlighted from 1 to sub-rule 1 to sub-rule 5. These are areas that you're proposing that we should consider as part of the general responsibility of the speaker, because we think that is important to do so, because there's an issue there that the speaker for sub-4 says the speaker is responsible for the strict observance of the rules of the House and shall decide questions of order and practice in the House. And there are other areas there that you are raising about the responsibility and of the speaker there. I think our view in the subcommittee was consensus that we must put forward to the Rules Committee for consideration. If the Rules Committee is happy with it, then it becomes a rule for the National Assembly. Once of all, the National Assembly has adopted the entire rules from 1 to 15. We thought that is a very important area. That a member, when you want to know what is the role of the speaker, despite the constitution, because it's there, but also in the rules, the person must know that when the speaker orders me to get out of the house, and I imagine waste time, I must get out of the house. And then because in the rules, there's the general responsibility of the speaker to do so, and we have given this, and that's the main consensus among the party. There were some views, of course, expressed by Honorable Shilambo, but generally, all members in the committee, they accepted that it's important to put in the rules. We thought that the Rules Committee should accept it, because it's very important. One of the speakers who highlight it in our rules, we think it doesn't cause any harm, and they assist and clarify issues for a member to stand up and raise some of the issues if you think we are not doing accordingly. That's what really we are proposing for consideration, also acceptance, almost like this needs.
Honorable Shibambu. And then Honorable Michael.
No, the rule overlaps to one of the rules that made the substantial submission on in terms of the powers of the speaker, because what we were objected to was the powers of the speaker or whoever presiding officer to suspend a person for 5 days or 10 days or 15 days without a process. And our basis was to say that that cannot be constitutional. Even hardened criminals are not just said no because they've done this, they are now sentenced to cages. There must be a process before sanctions are meted out on members of parliament. There can be a notion that within the other following the rules and they are subjected to a process. And then if a mechanism is developed, then there can be a way of dealing with this. Because that one of just declaring from the chair that someone is suspended for 5 days or 10 days as proposed now is problematic, and I don't think consistent with the spirit of the constitution of the Republic. The last issue now is to, I don't know why we have to use strict infinitives in the rules, and what do you mean by strict? The rules would have committed the same thing if you say that the speaker is responsible for the observance of the rules of the house. Why do you have to extract it? You can say that when you give political speeches in a rally or something like that. Not in your rules. Split infinities are for different platforms, not here. I think that suffices.
Sure. Honorable Kadebe, Honorable Kilian, Honorable Shahute. Oh, and Honorable Michael.
Thanks, Speaker. Speaker, what I want to say, and I think this is a very good thing that the committee came to consensus with, was that in everything that we do, in all the decisions that we made with regard to the powers of the presiding officer and the speaker and the deputy speaker, everything follows procedure. So there'll never be a situation where the speaker can ask a member to leave the house, the member will then leave the house. But if that member or any party member feels aggrieved, there is a process that then can be followed. And we sat long and hard and discussed this, and it was one of the big issues that this task team came up with. And I think it's something that the task team can be very proud of, is that we came up with the correct procedures to be followed should you ever feel aggrieved, and processes that, Madam Speaker, you yourself will follow and your presiding officers will follow in terms of when a ruling is taken, if anyone feels aggrieved, and also, which I think is very important, which has caused a bit of contention in the past, was the time span that a ruling must be given. So I think in terms of looking at procedural sense, not only to the majority party, but of course to minority parties as well, the task team did a very good job and a very successful job in making sure that presiding officers and speakers and deputy speakers are held accountable to Parliament while executing their duties fairly. I think that was a very good thing that the committee came up with.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm following from what Honorable Carter said in the previous discussion, that the work which was done by the subcommittee is good, but what happens is that it is not here and restarted again. So what I'm asking for, the Speaker, is that if the person is going to make an input here, he must indicate whether it's part of the subcommittee or not. Because the subcommittee here must derive a mandate from the broader committee of the Rules Committee, which will not be reopening the debates which were there, which the head might have lost in the subcommittee, come and reopen them here. And that's what I'm asking for, Chairperson, because this provision which is here, I think it is good that through the rules of Parliament, the authority of the Speaker must be defined. So, and then from the way it is presented here, it is correct. I don't see anything in conflict with the Constitution here. So, as a member who is not part of the subcommittee, I really support this insertion of the rules here, this insertion of the rule. Thank you, sir.
I must say, Honorable Michael, your report is very encouraging about the spirit of discussion in the subcommittee. Honorable Singh,
Just on a point of Honorable Speaker, I think the chairperson of the subcommittee made it very clear in the beginning. There are 106 rules in the current rules, right up to the end of Chapter 9, but only 29 issues are being brought here. So there's been consensus, and the reason they brought here is for an open discussion and debate. So it allows us to continue in the manner that we have been continuing. Thank you.
Iman, I think the issue really is members of the subcommittee must give members of the Rules Committee a chance to make an input into the report they are bringing for our attention, rather than they themselves rehash their debates in the subcommittee. Siyamcela, members of the subcommittee from all sides, you have a right to say something, but it must be more the Rules Committee members making an input into the report you are giving us. The Honorable Shambu, have I forgotten you?
No, I thought that what we're doing, there's 26 or 29 areas where there are areas of disagreement. It's necessary that we must apply the rules committee of the different perspectives and everything else, because in the manner in which they are being summarized, does not capture what the essence of the disagreement, so that the rules committee is well appraised of the areas where we're not agreeing on. And then if we take those issues, I think the member there, must apologize for or speak to Honorable Boy at least, who will give him some guidance in terms of how we deal with this. So let's be out to at least, and that is why in the subcommittee there was an emphasis that we can come with submissions here to persuade the Rules Committee on an alternate perspective on the questions that we couldn't address. Let's continue the way we'll be doing. I don't think we'll waste time.
Speaker, I think I don't want to believe at the point. Within the spirit of openness, transparency, let us engage the submission by the subcommittee, and we take it from there, Pungane. I'm sure you are prepared to withdraw.
Honorable Killian.
With permission from Honorable Hadere, Honorable Speaker, I just wanted to say that I fully align myself with the Honorable Michael and the deliberations in subcommittee. It was very constructive, and we're really trying to find each other in the subcommittee. What, as far as the list that is provided is concerned, I just wanted to point it out that not on all these matters we actually have different opinions. We've in fact worked through many of these. And it's only in some respect that there are different options. So I think if we look at the heading, it says substantive proposed rule changes. It does not say matters on which the subcommittee couldn't reach each other. And I think that is important, Honorable Speaker, that we don't reopen, and I think that is what Honorable Carter referred to. We've cut a good ground. Now we're coming back, and now we're trying to reopen matters that we've already discussed at length and where we have found each other. And I think we should refrain from doing that. And I would like to suggest that a rule covering the general authority of the Speaker was those matters. I would like to accept that we have had sufficient consensus on that. Thank you.
Sufficient consensus, but we say the subcommittee should go and do more. Is that what we're saying?
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Honorable Speaker. I was going to suggest that if it happens that even on matters where there has been sufficient consensus, but maybe parties would feel that there must be an elaboration on an issue without deliberating the point here, I think it would be important that the party can say that while we have generally accepted the principle, there are further issues of persuasion and drafting that we still want to debate in the subcommittee, so that we create a space for parties to be able to further persuade one another in the subcommittee. Thank you.
Honorable Zozi and then Honorable Mulder.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to check, man, because there's a consistent usage of decorum and proper decorum, that the subcommittee goes and tries to define that. Because now the system has maintained. No. On the 17A, there is a reference to the fact that the speaker will maintain and preserve the order of and the proper decorum in the House. I know it's a consistent usage, a consistent tool of ordering members of parliament, this carry weight called the quorum. I think that they set it aside and try to break it apart. What do they really mean to suggest to be maintained? Because it's here now in the powers or the authority of the speaker.
Honorable Mulder,
Honorable Speaker,
thank you for
I have now twice heard the term being used of sufficient consensus. I'm concerned about that. There's no clarity as to what sufficient consensus means, and I think we should be very careful by using that term. If things need to be discussed further, we discuss them further. If there's agreement, we can proceed.
Okay, the subcommittee can entertain itself. I think South Africa has heard before the occasion to grapple with this concept of sufficient consensus at great length. And you know what? We made progress as a country. Honorable Madsen?
Yes, thanks, Madam Speaker. I'm also concerned about the word consensus. Maybe I need a dictionary. Because the fact of the matter, as a result of the AFF made a submission on this issue, it still means that there was no consensus on the subcommittee. Unless if this House is suggesting that the subject back to the subcommittee, the issue of our submission on this issue. Thank you.
I just wanted to indicate that the matter of the power of the Speaker to suspend a member is coming later when we get to item 18 in the judgment.
Can we deal with the removal of the speaker or deputy speaker?
No, I'm not sure why the chair should be dealing with it anyway, so to speak, but in the rules committee, in the subcommittee, we had a long discussion about this matter. Because the current rules, the manner in which that was said, are not very assisting. They're being what we call politics on political ground. We thought that political ground are very subjective. And we must be clear in terms of our rule, what is it that we can propose a motion for the removal of the speaker or even a deputy speaker. That's what we are proposing in page 14, 18A. Those are issues there, that a motion for the removal of the speaker from office must have complied, and then the issue that we are raising there, Honorable Speaker, that seven sub-rules that are dealing with this matter. And we had a long discussion on the political, and then what is an issue that we want to put on that. That's why we propose them to put them, to make it very clear what are the criteria, what you want to do, what are the issues that you want to do. Because the current rule of the National Assembly will say it covers the removal of the speaker on political grounds. And as I say, when I was speaker, that is not really the subjective issue generally. That's why, Honorable Speaker, we also dealt with what we call general authority and responsibility of the Speaker. A removal of the Speaker must be based on the failure of the Speaker to deal with the holding of general authority and responsibilities. It shouldn't be just an issue of a foreign nation, because it's a problem. It doesn't assist us to address whether the Speaker has failed to do things according to what the rules are specified on that. That was really the motivation on this matter in order for us. That made us to remove the current rule B on our rule book, that we thought that we should amend it accordingly to make it clear on what ground really a member can stand up in the House and move a motion for the removal of the Speaker, or even a different Speaker. We thought that is very important for a head of the institution, not just to be, to have motions that are not substantive, motions that are very speculative, motions that are not really dealing with the functions and the responsibility of the Speaker. That's why Honorable Speaker wanted to make this, to amend the current rule, to put this proposal.
Honorable Carter, did you not have your head up? Oh, okay. Honorable Sian Hazen and Honorable Hatera.
Madam Speaker, thank you very much. I just would like to urge some caution here in terms of compliance with the Constitution of Section 52.4, which doesn't set down any specific criteria that are required. And I'm concerned that we just need to check that the limitations that the subcommittee is proposing here could well fall foul of the constitutional rights instead of the document to be able to remove the Speaker. The Constitution says a simple majority. You know, you say that political grounds are subjective. I would say that the Deputy Speaker and present incumbents aside could well also have subjective grounds for refusing or finding a reason on political basis for such a motion not to be proceeded with. And that would then impede, that decision would then impede a Member of Parliament's rights under the Section 54 of the Constitution. So we just need to be cautious that the impediments that we're putting in place are not sufficient to have this particular intervention struck down.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. As a member of the Rules Committee, who is not part of the subcommittee, what's happening here is that this rule which is being inserted here has not gone far enough. Because I think what is left also provided is the majority which must be garnered before the Speaker or the Deputy Speaker can be removed from the position through a motion of no confidence. So that's a simple majority. I think it's not fair. I think it's just to be a two-thirds majority. That's how it should go. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Singh and Honorable Carter.
Honorable Speaker, I think the question here is whether, you know, we should be prescriptive that a motion of no confidence must include the grounds on which the proposed removal from office is based. Because normally, in normal circumstances, one moves motions, and I can stand up and move a motion that, you know, the motion of no confidence in the Honorable Speaker, and I think that would respect. But, you know, and that will be decided upon by the Programming Committee, whether that motion comes on the order paper or not. But maybe we should not be prescriptive on grounds. That's one issue. The second issue is the issue of the methodology of voting. Now, unfortunately, we are bound by the Constitution in that regard because it says by a resolution of the House. But, you know, in another forum, one is looking at a constitutional amendment, but that is not for the Rules Committee to consider. Because the Speaker, the President, and the Deputy Speaker are elected by secret ballot, yet they can be removed by resolution of the House. But that's not for the Rules Committee, because at the moment we have the Constitution prescribes what we should do. But that's a matter some of us are looking at into. So I think the question of the grounds is the thing that the subcommittee has got to look at.
Honorable Kata, I covered. Okay. Honorable Lozi.
Mr. Chair, I understand that this is a constitutional question which has to be taken in a different platform. But you know, the manner in which this rule, the new one, has been delivered, is that makes one think that, I mean, really it will be much more useful the day we think of an independent speaker from the
amenities of the house, the grounds and all those things. I can't imagine the situation at all, because the speaker is almost directly elected the day we decide the vote, like the president, in a way. But I know it's a constitutional question. And for us, the bigger substantial discussion is the discussion of an independent speaker, which will, in many ways than one, I think, do what we are trying to do, which is restore that type of confidence we have on the authority, as it were, of the office of the speaker. That's my contribution, Tessie.
Well, that's an introduction of a substantive matter. Yeah, and you might actually want to formulate a submission for the consideration of members of parliament, whether that's a matter that should be entertained and at what level. Because I think it's got implications for the constitution itself. Andy?
Maybe a commitment that we will follow it up. Thanks.
Madam Speaker, the rule has been drafted in compliance with rule Section 54 of the Constitution, which says that the National Assembly may remove the Speaker or Deputy Speaker from office by resolution without saying anything more. And then it adds, a majority of the members of the Assembly must be present when the resolution is adopted, which is contained in sub 7. So what this in essence is about is that Parliament, or the National Assembly, has the authority to appoint a Speaker. It must also have the authority to remove a speaker. That can be on two grounds. One, as in the case of the president, can be the equivalent of no confidence or a motion of censure or one of those. The other would be on the grounds of misconduct. In the case of misconduct, you're not dealing with a political issue, but you're dealing with a substantive charge, and you need to go the route of a substantive motion and the appointment of a committee and the speaker to begin a fair hearing, all the rest of it. So one has to look at both options, one of a political removal, for whatever reason, and the other a removal on the grounds of misconduct and specific charges. Thank you.
Honorable Karian, or Honorable Kidiza.
Thank you, Madam. The explanation by Mr. Hande helps a little bit, but I think subsection 2, subrule 2, deals with compliance. And instead of having all of that, if we just said by means of a substantive resolution, it then follows that you do have to look at the rules of Parliament and everything else. So rather than being so wordy, maybe that just one sentence could help. But I don't know if Handy could guide then in terms of a substantive motion you'd have to do in terms of misconduct. But in terms of a motion of no confidence, would that also apply?
The no confidence would simply be a motion by the House, and the suggestion is here, as per subcom, that should include grounds, even though it's a political decision that's being requested. But the substantive motion would follow the rule for substantive motions where there are charges against a member. So that would apply to the Speaker as well as it does to any other member.
Thank you very much, Speaker. I was going to suggest that given the discussion and issues raised, that maybe this is one of the issues that, again, the subcommittee must reflect on and look at the consistency also with the Constitution and how some of those provisions can be better articulated in the rule. Thanks.
I'm just wondering, and ask Masumele, how do we relate this rule we're discussing to Rule 66? It's dealing with the issue of a substantive motion. Should that cover the Speaker and the Deputy Speaker? Why should it be a different approach? Is there a reason, Mr. Castle?
Rule 66, as it stands, does not cover members of Parliament, including Speaker and Deputy Speaker. There is a rule that is being developed in these draft rules that is meant to cover members of Parliament. What applied previously was an order of the House that was passed in 1996 and 1997, where it was decided that for a member to bring allegations against another, there must be a substantive motion. So that order has now been reflected in these rules, the draft rules. Thanks.
I think it's the order that I was referring to. So I think the subcommittee must look at that order to the extent to which it covers what we are trying to do.
Huh?
Can somebody read it?
It's in the new.
In the new.
It's in the rules that are being proposed.
Honourable, sorry, I can't do it. Reflections upon members, residents and ministers or deputy ministers who are not members of the assembly. Sub 1, no member may impute improper motives to any other member or cast personal reflections on a member's integrity or dignity or verbally abuse a member in any other way. 2, a member who wishes to bring any improper or unethical conduct on the part of another member to the attention of the House may do so only by way of a separate substantive motion comprising a clearly formulated and properly substantiated charge that, in the opinion of the Speaker, prima facie warrants consideration by the House. Sub-rules 1 and 2 apply also to reflections upon the President and Ministers and Deputy Ministers who are not members of the House.
Let's let this matter go back to the subcommittee and all the issues that have been raised in the discussion taken into account. Can we move to declaration of private interest by members?
Honourable Speaker, on that one there was also made a sufficient consensus. All of us agree that when a member of parliament sits in a meeting and then realizes that there is a matter that could compromise him or her in terms of personal interest, a member must declare that at the beginning of the meeting. Once you realize the agenda, that this is an agenda, this matter is an agenda, you got some personal interest on that issue, it's far better for a member to make a declaration at the beginning of the meeting. Then a chairperson of the committee may decide that no, it's a very substantive issue. Get out of the meeting. Sometimes they just a little issue that I know so and so who's part of that, rather than really the substantive nature. We thought that we should clarify that and put it in the rules in a simpler way just to cover members of parliament.
Sounds simple, Honorable Ndozi.
Can you just explain the difference between personal and private? What is personal interest and how do you distinguish from private interest? Or are we just being tautological?
Speaker, there will be lawyers here who can assist us to define it. But we put it at a private interest because we thought at the time the private interest is when we talk about real issues that members benefit out of it. And so there will be a matter of personal interest in the same issue in a broader people. But in this one, we have an issue around the private interest. And there's a discussion on the lawyers on this matter. I think she could assist us. She has to elaborate it further on it. But I think the subcommittee was looking at defending the integrity of the member of parliament, that they should inherit a situation that is in conflict of interest because of where they are located when discussion are taking place.
Honorable Michael? One of the things that we said in the subcommittee was what you play in your members' interest. Some of it is public consumption and some of it's private. So what we were saying is regardless of whether or not it would be in your public or private declaration of interest, if you have a conflict of interest, be it private or public, you have to declare it before you can sit in a committee. So in other words, someone could be someone's boyfriend and they're coming before Parliament for a job interview. That's then a private issue and it would have to be declared. Even though, you know, it's a very personal and private relationship that you have, there is a conflict of interest. So it basically deals with what you would separate in your members' interest as being for public consumption and for private consumption. Chair, I'm sure there are ways. I mean, if a member wouldn't want to be embarrassed in front of the entire committee, a member could always go up to the chairperson and speak personally to the chairperson and explain the facts for recusing themselves. And of course, members are expected to have a very open and honest relationship with their chief whips and leaders of their parties, who they would also then have a very frank and open discussion of requesting and explaining why they'd be recused from the situation.
I don't claim to have a legal explanation, but the item 12 in the joint in the Code of Ethics for members uses the words personal or private financial business interest. So maybe we should just add the financial. I'm not sure that it clarifies matters, but that's, I took it from the Code for members.
Honourable Singh.
Yeah, thank you, Honourable Madam Speaker. Unfortunately, I was not there when this was discussed, but the whole question of conflict of interest is a bit of a tricky issue, you know, whether it's personal or private. I mean, if I'm a lawyer and I'm sitting in the House or in the Justice Portfolio Committee talking about amendments to legislation which might benefit my practice, can you say to me, well, it's a conflict of interest, you should not be there? You know, you have a medical doctor sitting on the HUD Portfolio Committee talking about some legislation that might benefit a private practitioner or something like that. So, whilst I agree that there should be some kind of declaration if it's absolutely personal, I think we've got to get our lawyers to look at the wording of this. I think the principle is agreed to, but the wording we've just got to look at again.
Yeah, and I would like to, and I think because we've left on it, has a direct personal or a private interest. The word direct is critical.
Okay. I think the input will help the subcommittee between the task.
Chair, Thanks, President. No, that direct, not right. It's not the question I raised. Because we're going to now contest whether people are indirectly or directly, privately benefiting from interests or what is in front of a committee. It must either be indirect or direct. As long as you're benefiting or you've got interest, that's the principle that this thing is establishing. All I was asking is the distinction between personal and private. But whether you are directly or indirectly interested in a matter, you must be clear. That's the principle we're defending. So I think we must immediately clarify that one is not relevant.
Subcommittee, you'll go and clean it up. A question of privilege. What is the privilege?
Well, I will request the task also to assist for that one. The discussion there was around the question when a member of parliament found that something that he related to me in a private and very confidential way, and suddenly it becomes a matter for everyone and the member to stand up in the chamber, go to the speaker. In fact, in my discussion is so and so, I raised this matter. Then I'm very surprised now that the matter that I raised in private and privileged position now is raised in the chamber for discussion, because sometimes it can impugn the integrity of a member when we talk in private and also very confidential. And the members of the Deputy Chambers are to divide everything that was discussed. We thought that it is important that kind of privilege a member can stand up. Come to you as Honorable Speaker, very worried about this matter. Yes, I made my integrity or the dignity of the House or myself. Then the Speaker may decide, in fact, you are reason to the Speaker to decide whether the matter is very substantive or not. Maybe just a personal issue, small one, then the Speaker may rule it, said no, there's no issue there. But the Speaker himself or himself may feel that no. It's a very substantive issue, the breach of privilege here. Therefore, I want to make a ruling in this issue. That's what we are trying to do, just to protect members of parliament. We know that it must be public, must be open, must be transparent, but there will be issues also that members of parliament must be protected. That there's no abuse of privilege.
Madam Speaker, this one is the rule that always said that members may not be interrupted except on a point of order or a question of privilege. And the subcommittee said, but what is a question of privilege, and when do you raise it, and how do you raise it? And the question of privilege is now defined in the definitions for Rule 1. So it's any act which could constitute an offence in terms of the Powers and Privileges Act. And the issue then is, how do you raise it, how do you bring to the attention of Speaker and to the House? And it's, you can't codify it, because so many different acts could be a problem in terms of privilege. To take an example, if a member arrives at his or her office in Parliament and finds an email saying, if you vote this afternoon on the issue before the House, if you vote against it, your family is going to be in trouble, then the member hasn't got time to
first go and discuss with the speaker, the issue is going to come up for decision right away. And then the member would say to the speaker, I'd like to raise a question of privilege immediately before that decision is taken. And get up in the House and bring to the attention of the House the communication that's been the threat that's been received. The speaker can then decide what appropriate action to take to ensure that members are protected. So that's just one example. There are other examples of a less immediate or less direct nature, and therefore 19B poses different options when issues of privilege arise. The first one is to bring it to the attention of the speaker without delay. Then, depending on the nature of the complaint, the nature of the threat, there are various options open, including that the member may raise it immediately in the House, or that the speaker will refer it to the Powers and Privileges Committee, and so on. So this tries to clarify a process that was never clarified in the rules before.
Honourable Singh.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Mr. Hanick used one word in his presentation of threat. Now, if there is a threat, then obviously the speaker needs to know. But if I go to Honourable Mulder and say to him, you know what, I defrauded the Department of Home Affairs of 50 million rand, but please don't tell anybody. Now, it's a question of privilege, because I told him only. Right? Now, he's going to tell all of you. See, so I think we must look at this quite carefully. And I think the best people to give us some advice on this as the subcommittee moves forward is the media. They say, oh, tell us off the record what happened. And the next day you'll see in the paper, a source said. But you'll know who the source is. You know. And yet, you know, I think there are court rulings that protect them from divulging sources and things like that. You know, on the record, off the record kind of thing. So I think we must just look at the wording of this question of privilege again.
So the purpose of the rule is clear. Okay. Yeah, legal services will assist in clarifying appointment and functions of whips.
On this one, the committee or the subcommittee agreed also, really. In our long discussion on this issue, we agreed that the whips, they are appointed by the speaker, that the whips, they do with the recommendation of the party. The parties recommend that we appoint the AG to be a whip. But it can't be appointed until the speaker signed that and agrees that we are appointing on this matter. We thought that we should raise this issue. We had a long discussion on it. But firstly, we said that the speaker, as a person really who's responsible for the rules committee, first and foremost, he must be able to have a say if the whip of the party that is appointed and endorsed by the speaker, because the speaker endorses that I agree that the party so and so appointed this. And therefore, if the person in the chamber is not doing the work that is supposed to do as a whip, the speaker will have a right to go to the leader of the party and say, man, Upegi is not doing what he's supposed to do. Sometimes it causes, maybe causes a lot of problems in the chamber, it's disruptive of the chamber, he stands up on 100 point of order on top of other point of order. Therefore, the speaker may say, no, Honorable Leader, this is what I'm proposing. Of course, it will be a decision of the party there, whether they remove. But we thought that the speaker must have a way of incorrecting, because if the speaker is responsible for the running of the institution, he must have a say on that. And they were putting there the function, general function of the party. That also should guide. We know that there will be, they will sort of play cultural functions, but also they play what we call institutional function of ensuring that there's decorum in the house and Abu Floyd, that there is absolute dignity of the house, that the whips members attend. They also have institutional responsibility besides their party responsibility. We thought that the speaker can play a role on that. Of course, the speaker will always make the recommendation. The party, they will consider that. If the party feels that the speaker's recommendation may not be correct, of course, but we thought that's important because the whips are paid for the work that they are doing in terms of the institution. Therefore, the speaker must have some say
in terms of the overall work that the rule is doing there. But the point that also raising though, Honourable Speaker, is 3, and in page 17, sub-rule 3, 21A by sub-rule 3. And then we've raised this issue because there are parties, Honourable Speaker, who don't qualify to have a whip. But generally, they have some people who work as their whip. And the point that we are saying that the speaker sometimes take a decision, or this party must be grouped together, they have one or two ways. But in terms of the calculation and formula, they are not qualified to have a whip. Those people who thought that it's important for the speaker to have a bigger say, to have a bigger say, firstly to ensure that those colleagues who are appointed under that rule, they are able firstly to report back, that they don't go to the chamber, but stand up in the chamber and say that I represent this team when there was no consultation, there was no report back, there was no mandate given to a member. We thought that is important for the speaker from time to time also to consider the whole issue of rotation. That's rotating them. Maybe there are 15 parties, 5 parties qualify, maybe another 10 parties don't qualify to have a whip. And then the speaker put them together and say you need 2 weeks here, and those people should be responsible in terms of ensuring that there's coordination of the smaller parties in general. But because they're not qualified in terms of the formula, but the speaker feels that it's important for these parties also to have some representation in managing, the speaker must have a bigger say in terms of the rule 3 that we're proposing there. We think that because it's important that those who speak on behalf of those parties seek mandates and report back to them when they need to report back to them, because what we have seen is that sometimes people stand up in the chamber and say, of course, the rule again is drafted for general application. And therefore, sometimes people stay up in the chamber speak, and the very same party, other parties that are supposed to be part of the team, stand up there and say that we are not representing us. We think that is causing problems in terms of the overall management of the assembly. That's why then we move on to putting what we call general functions of the whip. Because the speaker will look at the general function of the whip and make proposals. If a person is not fulfilling the general functions of the whip, and then approach the leader of the party to deal with the situation.
You mentioned decorum, and the Honourable Rose is very concerned about this way. You didn't actually explain what you agreed is decorum. Honourable Skinner, Honourable Didiza, Honourable Ndlozi, Honourable Shivangu.
Madam Speaker, thank you very much. I think that there is a problem here, and from the Democratic Alliance, we certainly would not support the Speaker making recommendations about what's been removed. I mean, I get a letter from every week about on the waters, there could be a whip, you know, a particular whip who takes points orders, or there's a personal disagreement or a personal dislike, and I think that it just allows too much subjectivity. I definitely think it's up to the parties to manage their whips. If anyone's going to make an intervention around the whippery, I think it should be the chief whip, through the chief whip's forum, where he could perhaps raise any concerns that he has around whips function. But I really also think we need to be very careful around his appointment of these roving whips and how they're done. You know, we do everything by and large, speaking time, etc., through a system of proportionality. And that's in line with the Constitution, which says that parties must be represented in a manner consistent with democracy and how they're broadly represented in the House. I worry that if we start making arbitrary appointments, it could well upset the balance of the other parties, and I would urge some caution there. Thanks.
Through you, Honourable Chair, having listened to the chairperson and kind of the motivation of how this matter might have arisen, I still feel that the issues of the functioning of the whippery should not be brought to the speaker's level. The chief whips of parties must manage the whips and their functioning. If there is a view that parties must elaborate on the functions of the whips, I think that would have to be important that parties do so. But I really feel that for now, it's not a matter that must be brought to the speaker level to actually engage parties about the functioning or non-functioning of their whippery.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes,
this is a rule.
I'm shocked myself, Honorable Chairperson. I think members of the House must speak to, of the subcommittee must speak to, the broader principles that constitute our democratic practice. It's a serious liberal infringement to suggest that a speaker who is a political party member, as per the parties at the moment, I mean, I'm not sure, but there are some positive things here. One is the question of the speaker. No, before that, let me just say, I want an explanation on the consistency of multi-party practice. If you look at subsection 5, like, of the rules, you expand on the responsibilities or functions of the whip. The consistency of that with the whip of, like, 4 parties that are small. It's not consistent because whips are supposed to whip in the interest of their own party. Then they must whip other parties. I don't see the consistency between the two. It's just something that I think we must further elaborate on. Otherwise, we must remove those things of removal, appointment. Yeah, they are not at all necessary. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Shirago?
No, I think the point is clear that the mistake of including that the speaker can appoint the whips must be admitted as a mistake and done among from the rules. It's not necessary.
That the current practice is indeed that the speaker appoints on the recommendation of the party.
Honorable Dudley. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd also caution against the office of the Speaker over interfering with parties' decisions regarding whips, but I will speak from the point of view of smaller parties. And there's a clear distinction. When we are grouped together for the purposes of Parliament and there are whips put in place, those whips can only actually facilitate an agreement in terms of which committee people go on and those kind of arrangements. You can never stand up in Parliament and speak on behalf of another party. So every party will have their chief whip sitting in Parliament acting on behalf of their party and making decisions on behalf of their party. Those things cannot be a collective thing. You can discuss if you choose to, but it's not something you can speak on behalf of another party. So the only the purpose of those whips is purely to facilitate an easier sort of working relationship in terms of who's going on trips, who's going, these kind of things, and that works. The minute you start saying that we're going to a task team meeting on your behalf, it falls down completely because there's no way that you can dictate to any other party or hold any party to what was decided in that meeting. So we have to be careful there.
Speaker, just in terms of the appointment of reps, the Speaker is the Treasury, is in charge of the budget of Parliament, and it is funds from Parliament that are made available, special funds, to reps. And therefore the Speaker has to formally appoint in order to access the parliamentary funds. That is an administrative function, if you like. Whether it should extend to remove it as well is an issue which one can look at.
It works quite shortly, actually. So don't correct that which is fine. Because
Okay. No, we're raising a point, though, Speaker. Is that I know that the current situation is like that, that the recommendation is from party leaders, then we appoint. But for smaller parties that you group together,
yeah,
it is the duty of the Speaker to do so. We thought that the rotation of this party, we can amend the rule, but I think they must be rotated one or another. But the Speaker must decide on that, where he wants to do that. There are options that are put forward in terms of the notes that we put forward, how issues work on that, but it's clear that then Speaker will take the view that is expressed by the meeting now, and then maybe we shouldn't go for the removal of the Whip. But the point has been that the principle level, in fact, is the very one that was raised by those things, that if you vote this way, therefore must remove this way.
if a person is paid by the money of the parliament to work, then the speaker must have some recommendation to make if a member of parliament is not doing what he's supposed to do. We know that, of course, is an issue that we have to discuss as we move on. There's no harm, honorable speaker, to drop it from the rules.
Honorable Dudley and Honorable Waters, Honorable Stambo, Honorable Rosie, Honorable Mulder, Honorable Kubiba. I hope someone writes in those names. Seriously.
Thank you. The rotation suggestion can only be disruptive in terms of re-administration. What should be possible, though, is that within that grouping of smaller parties, that they themselves can decide at any time if they wanted to change their rookery. And that would be communicated to yourself. But to put any rule of rotation and pose that on you, you're going to cause problems for yourself. Plus, it's going to be extremely disruptive because then the whole 5 years are going to be taken up with people vying for that positioning. Thank you.
Yes, Speaker, I have to say that we seem to be sliding into a very dangerous territory if we add the element of rotation. We make it a bit loose and flexible. And because at the moment, there are small parties that are working together, but on issues of committees, etc., etc. But when the Speaker comes in to say, I'm rotating you now, that would be dangerous. Rather leave it with them, because it's working at the moment for them.
Honorable Mulder, followed by Dozy, and then Honorable Shram.
Honorable Speaker, we must all realize that as long as we have a proportional system, we will always have a multitude of parties. That's the reality of the system. That the proposed rule basically puts in place the current practice. I think it shouldn't be a problem. I agree with what has been said with regard to rotation. It's going to create a problem. The new introduction, which is not part of the rule, is given as a separate option, is allowing the speaker to remove someone. And I do not support that. I caution of that. The speaker appoints, which is an administrative action on the advice of the party leader, and the speaker should be able to remove also on the advice from the leader, who then would contact the speaker, not the other way around.
That's what they are saying. Yeah. Honorable Shirambu, Njohi before you.
No, I got a note on the Ndagane is insisting that the speaker came out of the speaker's observation, out of his observation, if it's his, can then say, no, I'm removing you because I'm not performing the task and everything. That should not happen. That has to be the political parties to appoint and remove the whips. The speaker will just find that into existence. I doubt that interpretation of the law there in terms of I don't need to get a proper brief on what that means, because we are earning money of parliamentary salaries and many other services, but we're not appointed by the speaker. We're with it. And that is one of the things. So you need to give us a proper interpretation of your law in terms of what happens. So that consistency of being voted here must be reflected that we voted by voters. Even the speaker is voted. So I don't know about that new interpretation that says that for you to get a salary and utilize the resources of parliament, now you must be appointed as someone. We're not appointed by anyone. We've been voted by the voters. In elections, those are the people who have employed us and appointed us. And then the functions can be allocated as per the determination of the parties, and obviously if the additional resources allocated, that it must be the rule of parliament. Mm-hmm. So something clear.
Okay. All right.
Sir, Honorable Speaker, I wanted just to emphasize 2 points, though. I think we are clear what comes Honorable Mulder is saying. That's real clear on that. We can remove, but don't forget that the point that you're making there, the speaker won't remove anyone. The speaker will go to the leader of the party and say to the leader of the party, due to this observation over time, we think that we consider to do this and that to the week.
The point that you are rejecting really is a simple matter that the speaker endorses the recommendation. We are saying also the speaker must also have some weight of the recommendation, but because the rules is taking a view on that, we are very happy to remove it, Honourable Speaker, in terms of the remover. But in terms of recommendation, in terms of rotation, I think it's still correct, Honourable Speaker.
That issue would only arise in discussion with a leader of a political party, probably arising out of concern from that political party, rather than the speaker out of the blue just deciding that the speaker doesn't like a particular week. Honorable Josie, Honorable Kalia.
The Honorable Ndagana must not resist on this one, Honorable Chikasin. Because once you make the rule, you open it up for abuse. And that's really what we are saying. If the practice is fine, there is no problem, because you're going to cause problems. The speaker must appoint on the recommendation of the leaders of the parties which qualify for it. So the speaker must then go and say, this is the criterion of qualification, and disagree with the party, this one does not qualify, and all those. So I think we must not write it down. It must remain the conversation between the speaker and the party leader as to the appointment of the recommended whip and chief whip and all those things. So maybe it must go out altogether. And from the title there, remove, remover.
I want to allow honourable members to pick up cups of tea and coffee and, you know, just stretch your legs. And in 5 minutes, let's be seated. Mm-hmm. Okay.